Welcome, everyone, to the second half of the zodiacal year as we enter the gates of Libra, the balancing of the night and day, and the beginning of autumn in the Northern Hemisphere. Unfortunately, due to technical difficulties, we were unable to get Simon Dider on this month to talk about his recently published book, The Wandering School of Secrets. And so instead, today I have the pleasure of introducing my very good friend, Aquis Knox, to the Hadean podcast to talk about Night School Volume 1, The Sworn and Secret Grimoire by Jake Stratton Kent. If you enjoy this sort of conversation on the arts of the occult and esoteric, then please like, share, subscribe, and leave a comment. As always, we are deeply grateful for every little thing that you can do to help our channel grow and reach a wider audience. I am your host, Matt Hadfield, and I am honored to welcome Aquis Knox to the Hadean Press podcast. Welcome, Aquis Knox, longtime friend of Hadean. For our listeners that don't know you, could you give us a little introduction to yourself and your work?
Of course. By the way, thank you for having me, Matt. This is a super cool opportunity. As far as an introduction to myself, I am a occult fanatic, grimoire specialist, techno-mage, occult nerd, I guess. I have a passion for studying texts from the grimoire tradition and the Greek magical papyri. And I have a lot of love for our mutual shared nerdy interests.
And how did you come to discover magic? What's the story behind that?
So the story is kind of strange. I was about to have my daughter and got the news that I would be having heart surgery while pregnant. So I had a bit of a rough patch with my health. And in that process, kind of discovered that I needed to connect with something that I hadn't before, but I wasn't sure what that was. Until after I had my daughter, I happened upon a book called The Occult by Colin Wilson. And that sort of opened the door of my curiosity because it had, references to Aleister Crowley and other things that I would find myself tinkering with following, reading that book. So my interest came from a place of need and a curiosity, and I fell in love with magic on the way.
So today we're going to talk about Jake Stratton Kent and his Night School, Volume 1, The Sworn and Secret Grimoire. But before we start, what was your relationship with Jake and what was his influence on you?
So Jake and I first connected online because I made a post where I was like, I was frustrated with the fact that I had to read all of these books and I was expected to understand them before I could practice. And I didn't like that answer. So I made a frustrated post on the internet and Jake was tagged in to give me the explanation that I needed. So his advice was valuable, of course. And he suggested that it's not only encouraged, but preferable to practice and study at the same time. So I was like, great, great. I'm going to do that. So I didn't know what I was doing or where I was doing it or why, but I did it. And it was probably the best advice he could have ever given me. So after that, we talked through interviews and just chatting. And he always was really welcoming of my questions and let me pick his brain, especially when it comes to Night School, because I had no idea what to do with it when it came out. He's been my biggest influence and through his writing and his conversations. And so, yeah, today he has a place on my ancestor altar and I still read his books every time I need to do something. So,
And you got the opportunity to interview him as well, right?
Yeah, so I did interview him, and through those, times, I was able to basically, I don't know, I would say, put myself in front of the entire community to answer questions that I didn't know, but also I think other people probably didn't know or wanted to know. So, yeah, thankfully Jake was one of the people that allowed me to ask pretty silly questions that I didn't know the answer to, and he was always really kind. That's what I love about Jake.
So, could you tell us a little bit about your experiments with the PGM?
Okay. Yeah. So my experiments with the PGM, I think like most people, started with the headless right. Which if you know me from 4 years ago, you would have known that I was really interested in trying to figure out how to connect with my holy guardian angel. It was like my primary concern. So of course I had to do the headless ritual because we all did. And so I started there. I didn't get what I was looking for, so I kept tinkering with PGM spells, trying to figure out how to use them in their fragmented states, and what do you do when the whole ritual isn't present, and how do you fix the fact that I don't know how to say these barbarous words, or the barbarous words are missing, or So yeah, so my experimentation started there, but in the process, I found there was so many useful things that I could extract from it. And so yeah, I think most of my magical play has come with just wanting to make the PGM usable. So
And it was around about then that I think you and I met.
yeah, it definitely was around when you and I met, because I think a lot of the stuff I learned was from you, especially because that was right when your pamphlet first came out.
All right.
Yeah, and I remember that was like when I finally learned, oh, this is how you can like reconstruct a PGM spell and how you could make it do things that, I like it was a love spell, but you made it so that it didn't have to be. And so yeah, there was just this whole like window that you opened for me that kind of was like, oh, wait, I can do this. And so yeah, so thank you. You're a huge part of my creative inspiration and tinkering in my early PGM stages.
No, you're very welcome. And it was pretty quickly after that that we both got very much involved with the EQ.
Yeah, much to everybody's disapproval. Did it anyways. Yeah, EQ has always been a huge part of my interest, and I didn't really understand the reason it wasn't popular when I first got into it. And so,
People aren't a fan of Gematria, really,
I guess.
generally speaking.
But I am, and I love numbers. I love numbers. But something about, the English EQ gematria was it was like my language, and I was influenced by Aleister Crowley really early on, and the Book of the Law was crazy to me. I couldn't even believe like that was a thing that existed in the world. And so yeah, naturally to find that EQ was a thing was not only it seemed impossible to me, but I had to play with it. I had to know how to make English and numbers part of my magical practice. And yeah, you also had a huge influence on that as well. I don't think I would have learned it as well if we hadn't done that alongside each other. So
Well, yeah, you're very much responsible for two rather large books which are yet unpublished. In regard to exactly that subject, but we worked pretty hard through that curriculum, and I think what's really interesting is because regarding the conversation we're about to have, the EQ, even though Jake sort of distanced himself quite considerably from the EQ later on in his life, when you read his books, you still find it peppered throughout, especially, say, in Goetic Liturgy and even on the front cover of The Sworn and Secret Grimoire. And so people who understand Gematria and understand some of the mysteries of EQ, it will pop out to you, let's just put it that way, without having to go into the details and explain it to you. But yeah, let's move on to that subject then. So Jake's Night School, where did he draw his influences to create this? And yeah, I guess, who was Hockley, and why was Hockley's work so important?
Okay. There's a couple questions in that one, so I will do my best. Frederick Hockley was an English occultist, and he worked closely with Ebenezer Sibley, and he's known for doing what we call a grimoire scriptorium, which is basically he was, in charge of producing copies of grimoires. So if you wanted like a Key of Solomon, you could go to Hockley and he would help you get a Key of Solomon. But he also was responsible of forging some of his own works. And one of the things I really loved about Hockley was his very Virgoan artistic detail that he put in all of his manuscripts. So just because I have a personal flair for color coding things myself, so I like that.
That's what I was going to say to you before.
Yeah.
Virgo placements unite.
Virgo placements unite. Yeah. So the Virgo nature of Hockley's Hockley's work is chef's kiss to my Virgo. So so I guess that's why I love it. But yeah, because he had his hands in preserving, so many texts, because of him, we, had a lineage that led us to Turiel and, kept the Olympic spirits alive. And so that's who Hockley was. And as far as Turiel, we know that Hockley is involved in its creation in ways. But I guess the interesting part is Jake and everyone else, we all know it's a forgery. But this is maybe just my perception. I believe that all grimoires are a forgery because they all started with someone else's text, and from there a new magician found it, got their hands on it, and either copied, edited, altered, or worked with it, and then it left a continuity, if you will, of a grimoire tradition. So that's what Turiel is it's a version of a text that has survived, that has the Olympic spirits and and almost all of the things that you would need to work from it. So it's a forgery of a forgery. So Hockley's text being the original, the forgery being Turiel that happened in later times. And when you get to it, by the time you're looking at it in Sworn, you are going to forge your own, essentially. Cool.
So you have you had an original copy of Turiel, is that correct?
Yeah. So it's funny because it was one of the first grimoires that I ever bought, actually. I bought it around this time, and I didn't know what to do with it when I first got it. I was like, okay, I got it, and then had no idea because I hadn't really learned like ceremonial magic. I hadn't tried to work any grimoires or anything yet. And so I was like, okay. So I sold my original paper that I got, and it ended up being relevant later, which was really sad. So by the time Jake got to it and he published Sworn, I repurchased a paper copy. It's not the same one that I originally had, but that's okay. It's still the original paper copy. And yeah, so I think I have all of the possible versions of the text, including Joseph Peterson's critical edition. So, which is larger than just Turiel, obviously. But yeah, it's been kind of always in my rear view since the beginning. So it's fitting that I should work with it now.
So the original version, I say the original, the version that Hockley produced is quite notorious for being unworkable.
It is unworkable, but it's not in the sense that I think you would really know how to figure out what to do with it unless you were someone like Jake. So I think a really clean example of this is like one of Jake's major contributions was updating the incenses. So straight out the gate, the materials recommended are most likely not materials you're going to want to be using.
They're dangerous, essentially.
So probably don't do that. Take Jake's recommendations, use the updated incense. That's an important one. But also, I think, and Jake doesn't really necessarily clarify this for you when he puts it in night school. But the hierarchy is something that I personally would not recommend using, and I did not use. And when I asked Jake about it, he said he included the hierarchy for historical completeness, not as a use this because it's in there thing. So, but yeah, the original doesn't have it doesn't have all the information, and the hierarchy as transferred into Sworn is incomplete and strange to say the least. So
So that's my next question, really, which is what are the inconsistencies in the text? And you've already mentioned that the hierarchy is a bit let's say difficult to comprehend, but there are quite a few other issues that sort of raise their heads up in this situation. So what's weird about the text?
well, I can say a couple of my observations. You might have some as well. But my first thing was it's called the Secret Grimoire of Turiel. And so I was like, who's that? Well, if you look in the hierarchy, you would find them as a, I think it's a messenger or is the spirit? I have to look in here. Anyways, you find them under, here they are, Messenger of Jupiter, and it says Turiel, and then it says See Secret Grimoire of Turiel. Well, that's what I'm reading. So we don't know who Turiel is or why or what they have to do with Jupiter, actually. So that was my first question. I never got the answer to that, by the way. It's a mystery. But on top of that, the hierarchy is incomplete. I remember when I was trying to go through and compare all of it, and I was cross-referencing with information that you had. We identified some pretty significant gaps in completeness. So, yeah, also just kind of an unclear, like you'd find even duplications. So, there's just not.
As you would in any good grimoire, essentially, there's always copies, or as what did Jake refer to them as ghosts, right? Ghosts in the machine.
Yeah, they are ghosts in the machine. I love that. It's perfect. So yeah, you have information here to see that there's invocations that you should be doing and with said spirits of certain planetary affiliations, but yeah, the information is just incomplete, and the hierarchy is duplicated and unclear. And it's angelic. So if you're me and you don't do angels, you might not be inclined to try to solve that further, but.
For those who don't know, like Jake used to say, I don't do angels. But could you elaborate on what he actually meant by that?
Yeah, so pardon me for not explaining this at a high level, but basically Platonic thought would have us imagine that the forces and things we are dealing with are somewhere other than here on Earth. And so the cosmologies that inform that opinion are often angelic and have flappy voice. And so some of the more sublunar, chthonic, or terrestrial cosmologies would have you think of things as everything is here and not elsewhere. So rather than being, out, it's all where we are. All under the moon. Yes. Hopefully that was an okay explanation.
Oh, it's perfect. Because I think he says in an interview, it's like, where else would you meet a spirit?
Yeah, right.
It's.
Unless you're going to take a spaceship to the moon, maybe.
Yeah, exactly, right?
It's possible.
So I know that there's also an issue in the text with the knife. And I know that you went on quite a mission to sort of work this out. Do you have anything in your notes about the knife that you could share with us?
Let me go look at my notes. Okay, so looking at my notes, when it comes to the knife, I had a lot of questions. One of the biggest questions I think was like, what are the inscriptions on the knife, and what are they for? So I think it's pretty common in Brumar tradition to find a knife with Agla on it. But trying to understand what the symbols were that you have to put on the other side, I was confused. So I ended up tracing it to discovery of witchcraft and trying to ask my peers and read what other people kind of thought maybe it was. And I think it's in Joseph Peterson's Critical Edition that he mentions he thinks it's just Yod-Heh Vav-Heh. And so that's where I got that idea. But yeah, in my attempts to understand, what the reason was for the symbols, that's what I discovered. And it led to some further experimentation that I did with discovery of witchcraft because of the connection that it has to the knife. So, yeah, I would say my knife experiments definitely led me to creating something, and I did make attempts to create this exact knife, but my current knife is an evolution of the original.
Oh, very cool. Yeah. It's always good when we riff off traditionally established concepts, especially when it's spirit driven.
And I would say that the spirits are always the authority in this case. So, I know there's a huge tradition of magical knives, but I will say I took this tip from talking to David Rankin in a unreleased, soon to be released podcast. And he gave me the excellent advice of consecrating a knife that you could change or reapply your symbols to the blade each time. And so that's what I mean about how my knife evolved, because originally I just had this exact knife, and then, found myself working through other materials and was like, well, I don't want to have 16 knives, you know? So that's how it goes. But yeah, for operations regarding this material, I use this.
So I think one of the most impressive things that Jake does in his writing is that he's incredibly informative in his practical works, but he doesn't hold your hand and he doesn't explain to you why you're meant to do these things. And I think what you're doing and how I've watched you explore Jake's work is that you really take on his like he used to tell people all the time, get your fingers burned and do the homework, right? So you actually went out and did the homework, and I think it's really impressive because I've gotten to see you under get to actually truly understand why these things are important and not just read the text on its surface and say, oh, that's interesting, try to copy it or just move on, but actually like find out why these mechanics function the way that they do, and then try to adapt it into your work and make it work. I think, and making it work is the most important part of the process.
Well, thank you, Matt. That's a huge compliment. And making it work is, you would not get your fingers burnt otherwise. You have to get your fingers burnt. You have to do things wrong and figure out why they aren't working or why the result that you were after didn't happen. And you have to be willing to know that when you're using a text, you most likely don't have all of the information and you don't know what you're doing necessarily. But I think if I learned one thing from Jake, it's that if you follow the instructions and you follow the structure and you're willing to experiment, enough will happen to get you to your next experiment. So yeah. That sort of certainty, if you will, that your attempts will at least yield information to get you to your next attempt. Yeah, you should just keep going because I have a long history of failed, silly, weird attempts that definitely informed my more successful adventures. So yeah.
But that's it. It's you've got to get out there. You've got to do the work. You've got to put in the hours, and and then you get to see the results of the hard work come to fruition, you know? So, yeah, I think that's what really distinguishes people in the community from people who might just be more interested in reading books, compared to people who are actually doing the work. So, yeah, getting out there and actually putting things together because, like I said, Jake presents you with all the information. He presents you with the tools. He presents you with the hierarchy. But when you actually like sit down and try to like take it step by step, it's in those moments when you're like, ah, there's a slight ambiguity here. How should I approach this? You know, or how do I specifically do this one bit? So it's he leaves things quite open and he leaves things open to interpretation by each individual in such a way that we can each create our own unique approaches to this form of sorcery. I think it's really impressive, and he was an incredible influence on me in that regard. But yeah, talking about the book itself again, though, what kind of issues came up for you when you were actually preparing to work this magic?
So you should remember this stage quite well, because there was a lot, but the first one was the hierarchy and all of my efforts to solve that were easily, I would not say easily, they were difficult to figure out, but the answer ended up being in aphorism 18. Which you and I had a lengthy conversation about in the early days. And yeah, after many of our conversations and debates, I think we finally landed on what we think aphorism 18 is meant to be. And Yeah, so it was basically these are offices, and the names are something that you should be able to get on your own and will only be effectual for, I think it said, like a certain amount of years. I can't remember, but
So it's often said it's 40 years, but and then in other locations it says 140 years. And
oh.
I think the original, well, I say original, but the closest that we have to an original version is 140 years. But
140.
I'm quite fond of the idea of it being 40 years because that's really the length of time that a magician might be active. And so what we're really saying is a lifetime.
Yeah, like these things are good for you during your human lifetime, and in my opinion, only you, because you are working with the offices, but getting your names to work with your spirits. So part of the pact making of your Liber Spiritum, if you will, is agreeing with the spirits on the terms that you communicate with them, but also the names that you communicate with them as. And I think that there's no right or wrong way to get those names. I think there's a lot of ways. And so how the individual magician goes about conducting a hierarchy, is their unique business. But in my case, it led me back to the papyri. So yeah, I needed to find out a way to get names, and I didn't have a solution, and that led me to doing some serious experimentation with the PGM. And so I got what I was looking for, but it wasn't immediate. It took a while.
And so, for our listeners who don't know, Aphorism 18 from the Arbitel reads: "This is Jake's tr translate or Jake's version." I should add. It reads: "There are other names of the Olympic spirits delivered by others, but they only are effectual, which are delivered to anyone by the spirit, the revealer, visible or invisible, and they are delivered to everyone as they are predestined. Therefore, they are called constellations, and they seldom have any efficacy above 40 years. Therefore, it is most safe for the young practitioners of art that they work by the offices of the spirits alone, without their names. And if they are preordained to attain the art of magic, the other parts of the art will offer themselves unto them of their own accord. Pray, therefore, for a constant faith, and God will bring to pass all things in due season."
I love it. Also, note that it says they are constellations.
Yeah, well, we've been through every single word of
Word.
every line of this.
Yeah.
So yeah, do you have any other thoughts on it now that I've just read it out again? I mean, Jake goes with the 40-year translation, which is I personally think is more accurate. But yeah, do you have any other thoughts on it now that I've read it out?
Well, just a couple of things, because with every single word being important. So it says, delivered by the spirit, the revealer. So that is the first key to probably the way you would want to get your name. It's interesting because it says, so yeah, therefore they are constellations. So I would like to revisit this, but I do feel like that's pointing to the obvious fact that the offices are astrological in nature and or involving space-time. So
We can always bring it back to the deacons and the mansions of the moon, right? Because,
yeah.
like, how are these how are these things being generated in these texts? And there's always that idea that there is some level of permutations of mathematical concepts, planetary virtues, etc., in combination, which produce these specific types of offices.
Yeah, exactly. So the offices being, like you said, it could be a decan, a lunar mansion, or a planetary hour, honestly. So yeah, the names that you give those are spirits, and rather than just having it be, a concept of space-time, but actually engaging with those offices as spirits who have names and that you can work with, and in their hierarchies, which would be according to, each division of space-time you're entitled to work with.
And that sort of brings us back to the whole point of Jake's sublunar interpretation of magic, his goetic version or interpretation, which is that the divisions of the sky are literally right in front of your eyes, that they're right there. You don't have to imagine a platonic realm of forms that exists beyond them, or like intellectualize anything higher. You can literally just go outside on a clear night and see the stars and work with them, right?
Yeah, I mean, and on top of that, I mean, when you're doing magic, I'm not sure if this is everybody, but oftentimes it does help to do it at night. Not all the time, but if you're out doing a conjuration and it involves, I don't know, stars, at least tracking them at night, looking at the sky at night, being aware that you're not engaging with these off yonder far distant things, but something that you engage with here from your perspective on Earth. And all of your rituals and all of the things that you do are involving our perception of the movements around us.
And how
So.
they, the stars in effect, the wandering stars as well, and the fixed stars are influencing the air below the moon. They transform the permutations of the elements that surround us, that comprise us, that make us up. And it's engaging with that more than a distant realm, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No surprise. Turns out you can see the stars from here. And yeah, we always have been looking at the stars.
So, really quick, maybe without going into too much detail, you don't have to tell us exactly what you did, but do you have any advice for people who might be struggling to, quote unquote, see the spirits or to receive a seal from the spirits?
Yeah, so that's a good question. I can tell people how I went about it, and it may reveal ideas or not. So, in the Greek magical papyri, there is a very extensive 41-day ritual, the eighth book of Moses, that I actually performed the entire thing, because a whole part of the process was that a name would be revealed to you. But also, I was still in the thick of my, I need to learn who my natal daemon is. And like, because I always remember Jake saying that, starting with the headless, days, and you need your intermediary. You need to have your intermediary, and your intermediary is the one that, can compel all of the other spirits, of all the elements. And so you get that, and then you can get the names for the following subsequent spirits. So that was my thought process in that. And I identified this ritual and said, well, this is what I want to do. This is me going into my magical retirement, quote unquote. And so that was the beginning of me receiving my own names. Was I took a magical retirement in the form of a ritual I found in the PGM, which I felt was adjacent enough to a Brahmin and Samech that that it would achieve the aims that I wanted. And it did and didn't at the same time. But yeah, that was the beginning of my receiving of names. And once I had that sorted out, it was easier for me to continue to get new names. And I also had a process worked out for how to do so. So yeah, basically, my process is quite simple. If I have a text and it has a name in it, obviously, I'm going to use it the first time the way that the text is with the name that's in there.
Like a calling card.
Yeah, so it's like I know that this phone number leads to this office, right? And I'm gonna call and I'm asking for like the government or whatever, the governor. Like I'm trying to call the governor. And I call and they're like, well, actually, the governor used to work here, but we have a new governor now and his name is this. And so I would be like, oh great. Well, can I talk to the new governor and get his name? And they're like, yeah, sure. Here you go. And so that's kind of how my process is. It's very similar to a phone call. So you use the name that you have available to you for the office, and often find out that that office has new management. So ask who the manager's name is, and you just do that for every office that you need, for as many offices as you need.
So it's Karen magic.
Yeah,
Asking for the
yeah,
manager.
Karen magic. Yeah, I love that. We need to turn that into a hashtag now, by the way. Karen magic.
Sorry about that.
That's perfect. Perfect.
but
Yes.
yeah, so do you have any tools that you use to accomplish this? For instance, do you use like a bowl of water or a crystal stone, or do you have coins that you throw or dice, or what do you have a medium through which that you can acquire this? Or is this something that having accomplished PGM 13 is more akin to like a auditory hearing the name or experiencing the name in the dream or
So I think this is going to be depending on the magician, because I've never been particularly great at auditory or any other types of seeing or hearing seership. So even scrying, I've tried scrying, I've tried everything, and so I've had to learn more. I don't know if you want to call it analog, but I've had to learn a different way to communicate. And so I made up, this is hilarious, I nerded out so bad about it, but I took Scrabble pieces and I worked out like a ratio of vowels and consonants that was equivalent to what English and humans use. And so I have a certain amount of all of the syllable or all of the letters, and I just have a bag of tiles, and when I need a name, I reach into my bag of tiles and pull out letters and just kind of do divination as I'm going. So asking the spirit with my dice, because I use dice for my primary form of communication. So, is this the name that you meant to give me? And then yes. Oh, okay, cool. So I use alphabet tiles to get names because it's pretty straightforward, and dice to do the rest of it. So
it's such a practical idea. It's really wonderful. I'm gonna have to try that, I think.
I'll have to give you the map or post it somewhere. But yeah, I did some research because my initial stages, and I learned this because if you just grab like a bag of Scrabble or whatever, you're gonna pull out a bunch of tiles and they're gonna be mostly consonants. You're not gonna have enough vowels to like make words happen.
Yeah, you won't get a repeated consonant like you might in a name. It's
Yeah,
just like one of each.
exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah,
So I think
so
there's like the letter E comes up the most than any other letter, I think. So you have to like balance the vowels as well quite specifically.
Yeah. So I have a specific amount of vowels per consonant, and which vowels have come up more often. So, like you said, E probably has like
I think
five or
it's E.
10. Yeah. So it's just trying to create a balance that mimics Human speech, because yeah, you only have if you only have a couple of the same, vowel, then you're not gonna your words are just gonna be consonant heavy and you won't be able to say anything. So, but yeah, they're my spirits always tell me that these names are just for me and my usage and talking to them. So it doesn't always have to make sense. And sometimes also, keeping names the way they are is also fine. But it's about establishing that with the spirit and having that contact. So yeah, it's not always guaranteed you're gonna need to forget a name, but if you do, that's a surefire way you can get some Scrabble tiles and some dice if you can't hear or see them. So
Okay, so let's swing back to EQ a little bit, it being one of Jake's biggest practices. If you when you can generate these names, when you find these names from the spirits, how can you use EQ practically to work with a spirit's name?
So this is where you really kind of start to build your spiritum because I mean, like taking a name, you can use it to make a sigil for that spirit, for example. Find other correspondences that are meaningful to you in your specific EQ system and seeing if there's any resonance with the spirit's name to something like, oh wow, it's similar to this word. Maybe it means something to me. It's not always going to mean the same to everybody else. So if you're that guy that's like on the internet telling everybody that this word means this value, like maybe it doesn't resonate for all of us. So there's a personal side of it. But yeah, comparing values and making sigils and also, spells and magic words, can take it further and do a lot of things. So that's what I do, using them in magic squares as well. So you can easily magic square them and reveal more about the names just by analyzing their numbers. So, yeah.
Yeah, I love that sort of stuff. It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Once you acquired this skill and you started working this magic, how did you implement the work? And what were your experiences? What were your results essentially from this experimentation, specifically with the Swan and Secret Grimoire?
So I think the biggest thing that I was able to do with this is honestly just forge my own Liber Spiritum. I never really knew how to have my own book of spirits that was all of my spirits with my agreements and my, it was all my work. So this really got me through that home stretch of not only, making the knife, which was something that I delayed for entirely too long, but going through the process of actually, I mean, this is where I really started working with the Olympic spirits, I think. Like I had done some earlier experimentation, but it wasn't until, I had these updated seals with the most important part, which is the magic squares on the back, which wasn't apparent to me until I got here, but that's okay because I acquired that skill along the way. Yeah, so kind of just establishing my work with the Olympic spirits and building my own spiritum with my own spirits. So I would say I kind of finally got to the point where I have a well-rounded practice that I always follow. Yeah, I mean, especially like an important part that I think that needs to be underlined more is just the stages of ritual. Like, I just want everybody to remember that the only thing you need to know to do most of these things, no matter what text you encounter, is the stages of ritual. Exactly. So as long as you have that key, you can turn any fragment of a spell or a grimoire into a full, properly constructed ritual. And a lot of these stages are not even going to change, you know, you're only going to change out the oath or the charge to the spirit and the invocations probably. But like my banishing's the same, my purifications and consecrations are the same, my confession's the same, which that's one thing I wish was in here. I think everybody should probably go get Pyramidos because it has the confession. It has a confession in there. And so, yeah.
So
So I
you
think.
specifically mean Jake's Goetic Liturgy, which
Sorry.
is based on Liber Pyramidos. Yes.
Thank you for correcting me. Yeah. So I went and grabbed it right as I said that. But yeah, so Goetic Liturgy has a confession in it. And so I usually just have these two things with me. I have my sworn secret grimoire and poetic liturgy, and that's kind of all I need to perform a ritual most of the time.
It's an
So.
excellent, small, very practical couple of texts. So specifically, you mean the seven stages of ritual, which Jake outlines in Turiel and elsewhere, I think, which also has a an origin in his work with the EQ, although he never states that.
True. Yeah. I think that's another one of those hidden things that are in there. I think it's kind of I don't remember if he mentions anything similar to it in Magnus,
Yeah,
but
it's written in Magnus.
okay. I was like, I know we learned that from somewhere, but I couldn't remember. It must have been Magnus. Okay. Yeah. So
It's in Magnus
pick up
Dictus.
Magnus while you're at it as well, because Magnus is the other thing that I take with me everywhere. I would say Jake would be very pleased to know that my most used and abused books are those three. But it's because they have all the practical material that you need. So, yeah, the seven stages are, I think, the easiest way to think of your ritual framework. And as long as you kind of know those, it's really easy to insert the bits that you need because there's a clear structure.
Yeah, it's
So,
like a it's a blueprint that is completely modular. So no matter what kind of ritual you want to accomplish, you can just pick and choose the bits that you need to have included, and then you just develop it through that framework, right? Through that blueprint, and out
yeah.
pops an entirely fully formed ritual.
Yep, and it's most likely all your own.
So we should also mention as well that there is a prior to EQ, there's very much a chaos magic theme that was going through Jake's work. And chaos magic, even in his later years, he mentioned that he had a great amount of sympathy for that system of magic. I think you can really see his trajectory through when you read Jake's body of work, you can really see his trajectory of the path that he was going through and that he was forming. But even in his later works, you can still see his origins written really plainly and really obviously. I think it's just he was just such a wonderful example of a magician who took his inspirations and fleshed them out so well that he ended up creating his own system. And that's what he's remembered for now more than anything, I think.
Yeah, no, Jake was truly a powerhouse. He did so much work and left so much to share with all of us. And so I feel fortunate that we get to all have it. I feel fortunate that I had time to play with it and to try my best. His interest in chaos magic definitely influenced me as well. But also through you and through most people. I think if you've ever engaged with any of Jake's work and talked to some of his peers and people like his friends, and you kind of you just sort of take on some of that, because it's all really well rooted in practice. And so once you kind of do it yourself, you oh, that I can see why that worked out.
So we mentioned before that one of Jake's biggest things was he was always say to people, go and do the thing, right? Go and do your homework. And when you read through Geosophia and Cyprian the Mage, he says it in those texts as well. He says, like, oh, I'm not sure where this is going, or I don't understand the origin of this point, so I implore you, the reader, to go and do that research, right? He also tells people to go and like learn another language, something that's going to be useful. He mentions like learning like languages other than the usual suspects, like Latin and that. So like creating a broader spectrum for people to interpret translate more occult texts from around the world. But one of the biggest things that he would always go on about is the idea that the stars have processed. And we've already mentioned the deacons, the lunar mansions, and the planetary hours. But how do you see those specific things functioning for sorcerers today, especially with things like precession and locality?
Ooh, this is such a good question, because I think one of the questions that comes up a lot is, at least from people who know astronomy, will ask me things like, well, what about the fact that the Earth wobbles? And I'm like, precession, you mean? Yeah. So there is this myth, I want to say, where people think that astrologers don't account for precession, or that we don't remember or realize that the stars have moved since maybe when Agrippa was writing, or since the Picatrix, or I definitely was influenced by Jake saying that, and you can see that. And especially if you get night school too, which I know we're not talking about, but
That'll be next time.
I'll be next time, but you can see that. He was paying attention to precession, and because of that, I paid attention to precession. And so, most of my work is really fixed star heavy, and figuring out how to get those placements and discovering that they were not where I expected them to be all the time. And also, you mentioned locality. So, it's going to really depend on where you are as well. So, what fixed star elections I have available to me in the Pacific Northwest might be different for you, or you might not have an election at all. And so I learned this from watching, I think it's Medieval Astrology Podcast is his name.
Oh, yes, excellent.
Yeah, so he'll do elections for the fixed stars, and he'll post videos about them. I don't know if he's done any recently, but he'll kind of give you, if you're in North America, if you're in Australia, here's your fixed star elections. And so that's kind of how I started to grapple with picking my own elections and finding out if a fixed star election was available to me. But also, like, Chris Warnock's book about fixed stars has been in my back pocket since the beginning. Because Jake always mentioned the fixed stars, I was like, well, how do I work with them? What do I do? And so there's obviously overlap, but yeah, learning how to find the elections, and noting that the stars have precessed is probably the most important thing. Because you might not be successful in your operations otherwise. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I think a lot more people need to, oh, maybe that's not the right way of putting it, but I think, well, I think a lot more people need to be aware of how to perform magic with the mansions, or how to perform magic with the deacons, because it's not something that you see quite so, talked about, discussed so much. Because, and maybe people have, the primary reason for that, I think, is that it's very talismanic based. So you see a lot of talismans that are specifically created for these mansions and that, but there are spirits that inhabit these regions of the sky, and it's the spirits that we're working with, and it's not necessary that we're only supposed to make talismans with them. There are other options, right? So do you have anything that you could share about how you work with the deacons or the mansions in that regard?
I guess I'll kind of say this is something that Jake influenced as well, because I asked him one time about if conjuration is similar to talismanic magic, and he said, well, they're one and the same thing. And I said, amazing, amazing. I'm so glad you agreed. So that was the confirmation that I needed to continue my talismanic operations. Was okay, this is totally legitimate. This is conjuration still. It's just I'm making a talisman instead. Got it. So I started making Lunar Mansion talismans, and I work with the Deccans a little bit different. I haven't made a ton of Deccan related stuff. I think Jake and his Lunar Mansion thing has me more steeped in lunar mansions. But yeah, I made a lot of talismans for the lunar mansions. But I think the more important part is once you have a talisman, you don't need to keep doing that necessarily, especially depending on the type of talisman that you made. We all know we can make a paper talisman that'll last maybe a time or two or whatever. But taking it further and making something out of metal or of clay or something durable that becomes your spirit home, if you will, and allows you to continue that relationship. Because again, Jake always mentioned things like, this isn't just like a transactional, hey, such and such spirit of Lunar Mansion, like you're forming a relationship. So the talisman should be the beginning of that, not just a one-time thing. And I think there's always room to make new talismans or reconsecrate your talismans and be creative with them. I mean, most of my fixed star talismans are actually just rings. So yeah, as far as other things that I do, I would say I mostly just use it for practical magic. So if I am making a big decision, for example, I'm most likely going to consult with my spirits, and especially the spirits that are in the space-time that I'm going to be making said decision. So, a lot of my posts that I make online, for example, are astrologically timed by consulting certain spirits of, the mansions or the fixed stars that are in the mansions and the Deccans, or the planetary hours, for example. I time everything that I do. So, the more practical way to do that is once you have your relationship, and you're a magician, think like one. Well, so basically just planning all of your events if you can, to consider the fact that how do I put this? So a sailor always needs a map and to know the weather. Otherwise, they're not going to have a very smooth trip or journey. So it's beneficial for you to kind of plan accordingly. And so, yeah, my most practical comes with doing magic and making decisions based on that and consulting my spirit team.
Nice. Right. So moving on then, how are you carrying the ideas set out in Jake's night school forward in your own work?
I would say I'm carrying it forward by just continuing to use the materials that we have from our tradition, honestly. I think not reinventing the wheel is also an important thing that especially if you're involved in chaos magic thinking, you're like me, prone to trying to reinvent the wheel all the time. And so I think, I carry his work forward because there's a lot of things that I use that is from our tradition that didn't need to be reinvented and that are perfectly fine the way they are. And in doing so, it not only connects me to my magical predecessors, but my community. So, for example, you work with Grimoire and Verum. So, I know there's a bunch of GV guys who all have a shared language because you all know Astrakios, or you use the same prayers that the spirits know and use. And so, yeah, so I carry forward as much of that as I can, and obviously mine's a little bit more Olympic spirit flavored than that, but yeah, using the materials that are in night school and keeping that as my frame of reference is kind of how I plan to continue carrying on the tradition, is not totally reinventing everything, but still adding my little aqueous flair where applicable.
That's
So
excellent. Yeah, it's really good. Really good as well. Really good advice. Yeah. Do you recommend night school for people who are interested in getting into grimoire magic?
yes. So I do, but with a caveat. And this is something that Jake told me as well, is that no grimoire primer ever gave you all the information, and they all throw you in the deep end. So this one is not going to do any different than any primer that a new occultist trying to do grimoire magic is entitled to work with, but it is the most complete, and therefore, if you had to fall into anything and it wasn't Paul Hewson's Mastering Witchcraft, it would be this. So
Okay.
yes, I would always tell people this, but I would give them the be prepared to get your fingers burnt explanation.
So do you think it's superior to his true grimoire in that it's more encompassing? It's more, not complete might not be the right word, but it's definitely more, it's more practical.
I personally found it to be not only because of its size, but he really, you can tell that Jake, a whole lifetime of practice had led him to create this, and he, you can tell he was very thoughtful in all of the things that he put in to make sure that they were all relevant and they painted a picture. And it gave you options. And so that's why I think it's superior, is that it directly will encourage you not to do as he says, but like you have to do it your own way. And I don't think that that would have clicked for me, or it didn't click for me when I read True Grimoire. I was in the I can only use Grimoire and Verum and but why like stage for a long time. And so this kind of helped me figure out what parts of the tradition inspired me and what I wanted to work with. And it gave me the ability to work with texts outside of even this one. So yeah, I think this one is going to guide people to the right path, and it's concise, which is helpful.
Yeah.
So.
And I think it's more than just that you, like you said, for instance, like following the seven steps of ritual and like being fluent in ceremonial magic, because there was that one time when I remember when you were feeling pretty frustrated about something, and I told you to just go to the beach and draw a great big seal of one of the spirits in the sand.
Yeah, it's true. You did. And it was honestly, that has become such a regular part of my practice now, by the way. It was such a good idea because it got me out of my head and into just doing magic with my terrain. I didn't have to come with my whole book and all of my things because I had existing relationships with the Olympic spirits. So it was really just kind of a big moment for me to be like, you know what? Just go try it and see what happens. And it was hugely successful. And now that's how I do most of my mornings is I draw Olympic spirit sigils in the sand by the beach. And yeah, so that was very creative. And I still do it, and I recommend others do it as well.
It breaks you out of that idea that grimoire magic has to be done, in robes with a sword and all the regalia attached to you. You can do grimoire magic with, dirt under your fingernails.
Yeah, and you should. You should. It should definitely be dirty. And I'm sure there's enough Wilmore memes about this already, but yeah, I think the robes are tired and the regalia and the whole thing. I think I find myself more comfortable just in a natural environment and doing things the way that I would do them, which, I still follow the seven steps. I'm coming pure and consecrated. But I'm also often in the wild. I don't do a lot of my magic indoors. So.
Right. So, for people who are interested in picking this book up and learning more about this style of magic and that, are there any other books that you would recommend people read so that they can get a bigger picture, a wider view of the subject, so that they can engage with it and have and you know get more out of the practice?
Yeah, so I feel like I've named a couple of them so far, but obviously Testament of Cyprian the Mage is probably one of the bit like if you really want to take this a step further and you really want to get into the history and the correspondences and the deep details of the Deccans and the Lunar Mansions and the Fixed Stars, that one is my favorite for that because just the context and the body of work he put into just Testament of Cyprian, and Geosophia was already a huge thing. So, but for me, I found a lot of value in Testament of Cyprian. And I mentioned a lot of Jake's other books, but things like I said, Chris Warnock has a bunch of pretty good books that give you some more hands-on practical examples, I would say. So I think that they're really it's good to pay attention to what your peers are doing in their experiments. And so and obviously The Hours by Matt Hatfield,
I've never
because
heard of it.
I know I what no, it's actually seriously though, Matt, it's probably one of the best books that we have available to us right now. And I think if anybody wants to do a deep dive and really, really appreciate the work that you put into it, it's totally worth it because it is a great companion to Jake's work. It stands amazing on its own as well, but I think for the context of understanding offices and time and The Hours, that's hands down one of the top. And then obviously just anything that David Rankin wrote. No, but yeah, so I think those are my top influences. as far as when it comes to particularly practicing and doing things related to sworn.
Nice. Right, so before we finish, what are you working on right now? And if people are interested in learning more, where can they find you online?
So I am always working and never showing because I've been working on a lot for the last 4 years, because I needed to focus basically. And so I have a new website. It's aqualia.co, and that is the central hub for all the things I'm creating. So you can find my writing, my podcast, and my soon-to-be references to my Substack that is coming out. So some other things that are really important that I'd like to mention. I've been building web applications for the community. And so yeah, hopefully soon I'll be able to share more exactly what those apps can do, but I'm planning on soft launching them at the beginning of next year. So if you find me on my website and on my Substack, you'll be able to get some sneak peek insights into the things I'm writing and the apps I'm building. So.
Nice. And is there anything else you can tell us about your online course?
Oh, yes, of course. So I have a course available. Thank you for reminding me. It's called Technomage Citadel, and it's available on my site. So it's meant to be an intro. I was not trying to position myself so much as a teacher because I feel very much more comfortable as a peer who's sharing my insights. So it's in a course format because I've put together, presentation of materials that I think an up and coming sorcerer would do to learn, and it's all influenced from my path and my journey, and a lot of that is from learning alongside you over the last, 4 or 5 years. How many has it been, Matt? We're getting
Five
old.
going on six, yeah.
Six. So my course is called Technomage Citadel. It's available at aqualia.co. I closed registration for the first round, and I'm going to reopen it in the beginning of October. So if people are wanting to sign up for that, it's available. And yeah, it's just basically my fun, creative way of trying to teach people some of the cool skills that I learned and try to get them ready to work with Sworn and Secret Grimoire or things that are like that. Teach you how to do grimoire PGM materials.
Excellent. I love that stuff. So, yeah, I will
Visual search.
include I'll include links to all the books that you recommend and to your site and your course in the description below. But yeah, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast today, Aquis. It's been really awesome getting the chance to not just to talk to you, but to talk about Jake. Yeah, I've had a really good time. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Aquis Knox discussing Night School Volume 1, The Sworn and Secret Grimoire by Jake Stratton Kent, now available from Hadean Press. I am deeply grateful to Aquis for coming on the show this month. It was the perfect opportunity for us to discuss Jake's work, and I'm really looking forward to continuing our conversation in the future. Aquis and I have a long history of working magic together and have many shared experiences with Jake's approach to sorcery. We have studied and even initiated together, so having Aquis on the show to talk about our progress, the Greek magical papyri, the mysteries of the EQ, sublunar sorcery, astrology, and spirit conjuration was an absolute pleasure. Fingers crossed she manages to create a pamphlet for Hadean in the future so I can have her back on the show and we can delve even deeper into her personal projects. Thank you all for listening this far, and Save for a few technical issues created by the Dark Lord Beelzebuth, I think this podcast came out really well. If you enjoyed this episode, then please like, comment, and share this podcast with your friends so that we can continue spotlighting our global authorship with the world. Next month will be our October episode, and we are very pleased to announce that we will have the exceptionally eloquent Jack Grail on the show to discuss the Greek magical papyri, necromancy, Hellenic sorcery, and much, much more. Until then, I have been your host, Matt Hadfield, and I will see you all again in the next one.